This is exactly right.
Karen, have you heard of Handsome? It's a new podcast from the brilliant comedians Tig Notaro, Fortune Feimster, and Mae Martin.
I have heard of it. People love it. Every week, this handsome trio of hosts takes a question from a famous friend, people like Stephen Colbert, Reese Witherspoon, Jamila Jamil, the Indigo Girls, and then they do their best to answer that question with plenty of hilarious detours along the way.
You're going to love hanging out with Tig, Fortune, and Mae every week, so go check out Handsome wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Listen to a new episode of Handsome every Tuesday.
Are you leaving or are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
With Karen and Chris.
Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgara.
I just want to show off that I can sound like the cast and crew of Roadhouse now.
That really did sound like Sam Elliott, Patrick Swayze, and a third tall guy combined.
Right. Yeah.
You nailed it.
I am able to go very monster mash low, or I can go very vibrato, Malmsteen, heavy metal high, and everything.
Is Yngwie Malmsteen a soprano?
No, but I can't go in the middle where I normally have a voice. I have what we call a classic cold in the business, and not COVID, but I think we forgot how long the common cold lasts. And then when I did this rock and roll show, I was only able to do the two extremes of vocals, and I was forced to do guttural death metal screams or 80s glam high screams. And then every normal song that I was good at, the ones I was never worried about, I couldn't sing those. All of a sudden, though, it's weird. I was able to hit high notes. That's all I'm saying.
So the show went well?
No. I mean, I showed up. Everyone in the band learned all these instruments. They learned not the instruments, but they learned the instrumentation of the songs. They learned the songs.
The songs,
using
yeah.
instruments, by the way. And then
always, yes.
All I had to do, I printed out the lyrics and I was karaoke singing with a little bit of body movement. I had the easy job. So I bought a flight and showed up sick and did the show anyway. And during it, your body goes into this panic mode where it discovers new ways of singing while doing permanent damage, I'm sure. And then it went really well. It was really
so it
fun.
Did go well. The answer is yes, it did go well.
The second show went well. First show, I stank and I felt bad and I slept in the fetal position. Second one, I found new places in my voice and rocked that house and melted faces.
Amazing.
And people gave me gifts like cinnamon rolls. Thank you, Amelia. Anyway, it's over now and I just wanted to give you an update.
Thank you. It's the energy that I like. Not the story, but the energy behind it that I'm enjoying.
Right, right.
Literally looking down the entire time.
Oh, well,
and like you're confessing something terrible.
No one's seeing me. That's the thing. I was coming through with the content, though. Plus, there was that high scream, which I think people probably enjoyed. So after you do something like that, you gotta back out and get kind of You got it.
Oh, I see. Go inside.
Yeah, get calm. Because I just did a heavy metal scream, so you got to pull back a little.
I see.
I'm not a shock jock.
Right. I get that. You know what's weird is when you did the heavy metal high scream, it muted out your Zoom, and I didn't know what you were doing for 3 seconds, and then you came in strong, and I got it.
Yeah. When we have today's guest on, because he's a friend, you'd think it'd be just a relaxing, like, oh, it's going to be easy breezy. Here's someone I trust that I know we have mutual love and respect for each other. But I get nervous because, and I don't mean this in an old guy way, but today's guest is a godfather of podcasting. I think podcasting, and I've done no research, started in 2005, maybe. Jimmy was right there, right at the beginning. I didn't think him and Adam Carolla. So he's the godfather of comedy podcasting, if you mentioned the other guy's name.
That's not an intro? What are you doing?
No, I'm so sorry. I'm really blowing it today, huh? I'm very excited for
our guest today, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Boy, I've been awful so far.
What's happening?
I don't know. I thought I was being myself.
You said the name.
I'm just going
You said the name.
Okay. You know him from clubs and colleges and cruise ships all across this great country, land or water. Everyone, put your ears together for our guest today, Mr. Jimmy Pardo.
Woo!
Oh, thank
you. So exciting.
Thank you, Karen. Can I just address two things out of the
box? Not if you're going to roast me. Well, am I right? Are you one of the first podcasts?
I think it's okay if you guys would have said, hey, Chris is not feeling well, we're going to have to cancel. I think that would have been okay. wouldn't have been upset. Maybe been the right call. And if we were still doing it where, like, you drove people around, I would probably ask you to pull over and let me out. That's where we're at this point.
Terrific.
There's the roasting that I was promising.
That's
yeah,
that roast.
Yeah, that I requested not happen.
Yeah.
Am I right on those dates off the top of my head?
I believe Adam Curry, formerly of MTV, started around 2004, 2005. And then Ricky Gervais was in first. And then
what?
I believe Todd Glass put it best in his book that I was the first comedian that you knew of that had a podcast. Because there were some other comedians that did have one. But I was the first one that you knew of in 2006. And then I do appreciate you making very clear when you compare me to Adam Carolla that I was the first one to do a comedy podcast. I think Adam tried at one point to do the comedy one, did that for a while, and then decided instead to be an asshole.
Right. Yeah. Well, you got two routes, and you're going to get the same numbers, I think.
Well, what I'm discovering, Chris, based on my numbers, is that the asshole route is the way to go, because I think Rogan and Dore and Carolla are all buying mansions. And I'm being funny and true to myself.
Right.
That's right.
You should have gone solid 2%.
Yeah, I should have horseshoed the thing. And I'm a lefty, guys. I'm a lefty. And then before you know it, I'm wearing a red hat. So
right.
That's what I should have done. This is politics with Jimmy Pardo with being vague about it.
Yeah. You're so left that you're right.
Uh-huh. If you're right, I don't want to be wrong. You know what I mean, baby? Come on.
I hear you, sugar daddy. Oh, I got a smoky on my tail.
Jimmy, do you remember there was podcasting early days? It was out in Santa Monica. It was literally like an airplane hangar, and there was mobile homes inside the airplane hangar, and people were recording individual shows in each mobile home. So like Greg Barrett had one, and I think Dave Anthony, like people were doing,
that was the
but
same
I don't
show.
Know if it digital radio.
No, it was digital radio, and it was Comedy World Radio.
Comedy World, that's
yeah.
right.
Wow.
Yes.
And Greg and Dave were the same show. They were the
room.
They had a manversation. They had a daily manversation, Karen.
That's right.
And Paul Gilmartin had a show there every Sunday that I was very grateful to have been a part of.
Yeah.
And Terry,
one of the funniest.
A guy named Terry was in charge of it all, and he was a great guy and a smart guy, and he knew good talent.
Yes.
And then he was also forced to have other people on the dial as well.
Right. But was that what year? I thought that was like early 2000s.
Well, that's early because that wasn't podcasting. That was radio. It was,
yeah.
I believe it was
audio vlogging.
I think the troops got it, Chris. Have a little respect for the troops. I know you don't care for this country the way that I do, but they...
I mean, Navy, I'm cool with.
Okay. That's because of the village people, of course.
Yeah, yeah. The Air Force can suck it.
Yeah. But that was the funny. You're right about that. It was out near Loyola University, and it was like, it was like this big airplane hangar. And then each studio was in like... in trailers inside the warehouse. It was the weird, like...
It felt like a dream.
Yeah, because why...
I was inside an airplane hangar, but there was mobile homes there. It was like that kind of
thing. Why not have the mobile homes just out in the parking lot? Why pay the rent on the warehouse?
Sound? Like audio?
I don't know.
For sound safety? I'm not sure.
I'm going to go with sound safety.
But I always think... I think about... Well, I didn't know his name was Terry, but I just think about that guy where it's like, it took... 20 years basically, or 15 years for podcasting to get kind of like where everybody knew about it. I'm like, that guy really did dig the first trench.
But again,
basically,
that wasn't podcast. That was radio. He was doing, that was a radio station. It was Comedy World Radio.
It was terrestrial.
It was terrestrial.
It was digital.
It was digital. So
it was like, it was podcasting just in a different form.
But it was live. It was live.
Oh, was it live?
Yeah, it was live.
Oh, okay. Shit.
Yeah. And by the way,
I realized that
Terry Dennisser was his name.
Nice pull.
Yeah, thank you. You spoken of Terry ended up getting me a couple of great jobs actually in actual show business. So he's been good. And he actually came to my when Danielle and I rented a house once. We had a housewarming party, first and last housewarming party I've ever had. And Terry was one of the people that came. So that's look at that.
He's a good person.
Yeah, he was a good man.
Coincidentally, the fans of our podcasts are called Danny Sores.
Now, that is coincidence.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yes, it is, because of the Do You Need a Ride Sores? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I think that's what they're going by. Karen and I did not endorse that was...
Or support.
On the streets. I support it now.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do.
I should start.
So do you remember, Jimmy, doing podcasts before? Did you do a bunch of podcasts before you started yours? Or
no, we sat down at my table in March of 20, in my dining room table, March of 2006, rather. And that was it. And the goal was for it to be a half hour every other week. And that show lasted an hour. And then we said, let's just do this every week. And then we did an hour every week. And now I think we do 7 hours a week. And people seem to enjoy what we're putting out. They seem to enjoy what we're laying down, as the jazz man would say.
Yeah. Did you not know Matt? You didn't know Matt. You got to know him on air, kind of like Karen and I have, right?
You are speaking of my co-host and producer, Matt Belknap. He was a fan of mine. He ran a special thing, message board. And he was a fan of mine who would come to all of my UCB shows and so on. And then
the message board.
Yes.
Why?
And he approached me about doing it. And to your point, I did not really know him. And we had a couple of meetings and then we got to know each other on the air. And we've become great friends and our kids are friends. And, we've been doing it 16 years. We've kind of grown up together.
You're a perfect pair. Perfect.
Thank you so much. I say it all the time that, I've got Elliot Hochberg, who's our video guy, and Garen Cockra, who's our 10-year intern. And me and Matt and I, and on paper, none of us should be friends. None of us. Like, sincerely, I have nothing in common with any of them. And yet the four of us in the room, we really work well together. And I'm very, very grateful that that these three people have, I'm not Marianne Williamson, but I mean, like, I'm very grateful they've come into my life because they've really, they've helped me make a great show. And I'm very, very grateful for it.
Yeah.
And you get to... I know you're joking about the other stuff of what all the kind of like men of a certain age with a certain background who go in a direction and then they just are like, oh no, this is what's going to work. I'm going to start telling everybody how to think and not to get vaccinated, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's their choice. But I want you to know, just personally, I think many comedians and many people who love comedy or love podcasts look at you as a person who is exactly your authentic self and has been doing it your way since the very beginning.
Well,
thank you. And that is inspiring and it's meaningful. And you're just so goddamn good at it. Like you have a radio voice, but you're also like just a really powerful comedian. And then you're just kind of doing this thing where it's like all your talents come together.
Yeah.
You don't have to pander. It's wonderful.
I want you to record. Well, we are recording this, I guess, if we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, we recorded it.
I'm going to lift that, what you just said, Karen, and put it on my phone and play it back for when I'm feeling low, because that was the nicest thing to say. Thank you so much for that. I mean that sincerely.
It's true.
I know. I mean, look, we're comedians and we bust balls and I open up this thing by making fun of Chris, you know, not taking a lozenge. But thank you for that. That means a lot. Sincerely, it warms my heart that you said that.
Yeah,
and I appreciate
Karen,
the nice words.
You did that to me last episode too. You took 2 minutes without thinking about what you were going to say, and it just flowed out of you, and it made me feel good. Have you been? It's like you've become
I'm dying.
A therapist.
Yeah, something going down?
I have terrible, terrible cancer. I have the bad kind of cancer.
There's no way.
No, you know what it is? I think we spend a long time as comedians, like, you know, taking our fingernails and scraping up a mountain. And it's very difficult. It brings out the worst in most of us. We're all very ambitious and very competitive. We're also all very insecure and sensitive, is why we are comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to the highest of highs when we interact, and also, you know, it's horrible times. And I just am so excited. Like when I saw your name come up in my email, I was like, fucking thank God, this is going to be the best.
Yes, of course.
Because it's just spending an hour with Jimmy Pardo, which is one of my favorite things to do. And I don't get to do a lot of my favorite things anymore. It just, you know,
well, that's because
by the way,
you become a monolith. You don't have time. I was in the airport. This is true, Karen. I was in the airport. I did my first road gig last week. My first road gig, only my second one since the beginning of the pandemic. I've not been traveling quite a bit. I've not been traveling at all. And I was in the airport. I went to the last remaining bookstore on the planet is at the airport.
Yeah.
And I saw it. I won't be able to pull it now. I'm grateful I pulled Terry Danister's name. But I was looking at the table and there was a book that had a book title. And I went, oh, that's a great book title. Who wrote? Oh, that's my friend Karen Kilgariff's book. So that was, so you don't have time to do your favorite things. I don't know when you sleep. Enough with you. I mean, that's sincerely. Enough.
I agree.
Enough with the murder and the drives and the books. I don't know. I turned into Annie Killer there for a second.
But the books
and a third thing. Although I had three things and it got confusing. What is the name of the book, Karen? Because I it's driving my brain nuts. I can't pull it.
It's called Stay Sexy and Don't Get Murdered.
That's what it was. Yes. Very nice. Yeah. I liked the name of the book. And then I saw that it was yours. And I immediately brought it back to the table and said, I will not purchase this after all. I was excited to buy it. And then I was like, yo, that's a great title. I'm going to get this just sight unseen, walked up. And then, whoa, has a $79. Ahead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No way.
They always have the new releases in the airport. But you'd have got to go through security and everything. I don't even have a flight. I go there to buy books.
It's a hassle, but I tell you, you know, if you want to get a book, it's the place to go. And all hardcover, they don't believe in the paperback.
Yeah,
that's right.
And
you can get you for $40.
Yeah, and the occasional magazine.
Yeah. This ain't a dime store where you have to walk through a beaded necklace wall to get your smut. These are hardcover. This is fancy. It's open air.
It's LAX.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris, would a Dayquil be a bad idea?
I took a NyQuil. It's the same thing.
Oh, no, it's not the same thing.
It's very different.
Have you, either of you ever been to the Seattle airport?
Sure.
Yes.
Holy shit.
One.
There was, I mean, not only is there like, there's just an art gallery of like posters, like Pearl Jam posters and all this amazing artwork. They have a Sub Pop store in there that just has a wall of cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. Of all the early what made Sub Pop get purchased by probably Warner Brothers. I don't know. But it's like a clothing store. It was, I'm like, how is this in an airport right now? The guy working the register was sleeve tatted and he had like colored hair. And it was filled with cool people. I'm like, well, that's just as specific as having like a, you know, Pendleton store or some place that only sells little handbags or little jewelry or whatever.
Right. They're like, might as well make something good for people to do while they're stuck here on a 5-hour layover.
I almost missed my flight because of how cool that store was. I kept buying
hats. But you didn't buy anything, right? Did you buy anything? You
I
didn't.
Got a hat. I got a sweatshirt. Oh, I got you did? T-shirt. That Sub Pop logo, just, I grew up with it. I didn't like realize it. All the bands yeah. I grew up loving, not just, you know, there's Nirvana and Soundgarden and Mudhoney and those early bands, but all current bands too. Like they are, and there's a record label store in an airport. Meanwhile, you go to LAX and there's just, it's just a dirty carpet and, you know.
Chris, you know that when you walked out of Sub Pop, the guy behind the register went to the back room and said, "Hey, boss, we sold something." They don't ever sell anything. It's almost like a museum.
That's what I thought, you walk in too,
and go, "This is a cool looking place." And then
I
you walk
was
out.
In a line of a dozen people. I'm not even kidding, pal. I'm not kidding.
I don't believe it.
I knew you wouldn't believe me.
I don't believe it.
I knew that you wouldn't. And now I'm telling you about the dozen people.
I feel I'm being lied to. I feel I've been brought onto this podcast to be lied to.
I'm not lying. There was a
bunch
of people.
It's our new segment.
Is this our segment?
Lie to Jimmy. Lie to Jimmy.
So I got to show up every week now?
Wait, can I do a lie?
Yeah.
That's actually the truth, just like Chris's? Chris is like, there is a line at the Sub Pop store in the Seattle airport. Jimmy
okay,
says it's
it was
a lie.
Five people.
Well, that's a line. That's you a know, line. A line's a line. Here's my lie. Here's my lie that's actually the truth. My dog was sick. I was going to drive home for Christmas. All of a sudden, my dog was sick. I run her down to the emergency vet. They're like, her organs are shutting down. Oh, don't know why.
Fuck.
I go take her home. They have to like, you know, whatever, do all new fluids. They're like, we think she's terribly allergic to something, but we don't know what. The great Brandy Posey of the Lady to Lady podcast comes and house sits for me. And like 5 days later, she calls me and goes, "Hey, so we figured out what happened to your dog." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "So she could see that there were bees in a tree in my backyard." And she was like, "Oh," so she called a bee removal place to have a guy come out. And he told her, "Those are Africanized killer bees."
Holy shit.
Oh my fuck.
In my backyard.
I know my line here. You're lying.
Right? This is a good segment, you guys.
No, you're making that
I'm
up.
I'm not lying. I swear to God, I'm not.
Here's the part I don't buy. I don't buy Posey taking it upon herself to call the bee guy.
She's the one that saved Britney Spears. Are you kidding?
No. That's a good point. She is a saver.
She's not associated
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, I know. I made that mistake before.
She's not associated with that. What a perfect word. Perfect word. So now the little doggy's okay?
She's totally fine. And I thought, you know, because I was like, oh, great. Now I have a dog that like can't get stung by a bee or whatever. You know, I was so mad that I was going to have like a high maintenance dog that I might have to pay actual attention to. And then we've heard that. And I'm like, great. Get rid of those bees. Yeah. We're all set.
That's awesome. And good for her. I don't think I would have ever taken that upon myself. I went, well, when she gets back, she'll call to figure it out. That would have been me. But good for Brandy Posey.
She's very responsible.
What we've learned is wonderful. Killer bees, if it's a dog, it certainly won't kill a human, right? They're not killers.
It's for every 10 pounds of a mammal, one bee sting will kill you. So my dog is 15 pounds.
Wow.
So she got stung and was like kind of on the verge, but it was okay. But if she had like stepped into the hive, I think she'd be dead.
Oh,
and if a
wow.
person steps into a hive, those are the stories you've heard of killer bees where they get swarmed and stung multiple times and then... that's how you're...
That would have ruined my week and weekend. And that was Blossom?
Yes, it was.
Oh, God. You don't.
My new one who's little and she's
really
very cute.
Glad that didn't happen.
I know, me too.
Wow.
Did you guys ever work with the comedian Killer Bees?
I've seen Killer Bees. I've never worked with him.
He had that catchphrase of save up where he would say, "Yeah, have you ever been to Disneyland? Save up!" He was from Nashville, and he would crush. He would destroy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a very nice guy. I only worked with him one time. He could not have been a nicer guy. I know that some comedians, you know, he's a punchline to some comedians because he had a catchphrase. And, you know, he had a Southern accent, so certainly he's stupid. But he was a nice guy, and funny enough, but save up!
Yeah.
Save up!
Karen, I interrupted you. You were going to ask me a question. I apologize. Hands on the wheel, Chris. Hands on
Zero.
The wheel.
10-2, baby. Larry the Cable Guy was very fucking nice to me. And I realized, oh, you're just a person that was forced into a character and you kept doing it.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to talk about, he's like, oh, you're into skateboarding? And he'd try and talk about the things he thought I was interested in. And then he had weird jokes that he would beg me to try on stage because he thought his audience wouldn't like his joke about birthday cake or something. So I'm like, yeah, I'll try this birthday cake premise. He's like, riff with it, do what you can. And then he'd come out and watch his dream joke get performed by his opener because he felt his fart and sleeveless poop hat audience wouldn't enjoy it. And it really made me
How did it go? How did the birthday cake go?
I did. I still do it. I've done it now for 12 years.
Yeah. Is that true?
No, but it did go well. And I'm like, and when he told me it was like the premise and where he wanted it to go. I'm like, that is a funny idea.
He, Chris, to your point, he was on Conan O'Brien's program once. The show was called Conan.
Yeah.
And he, he was a guest.
Was it on TV or was
it? It was on television. It was television, like a talk show format hosted by Conan O'Brien.
Was it that trailer park near Loyola?
No, no. Oh, okay. That wasn't podcasting.
Okay. All right. Jesus.
He's on panel. You know, he's doing his segment. And I forget what writer came up to me in the green room and said, if this was any other comedian, we would call these jokes genius. Because, like, the jokes...
Yeah,
right.
They're well written because that guy Dan Whitney was a good comic before he became Larry the Cable Guy,
right?
And he knows, so he writes good jokes, but he knows he can't use them with his crowd. But he used them on Conan, and he was really funny.
Yeah,
so, and he when he was coming through Austin, where I first met you when you came to town.
That's right. You were fresh off of being awarded funniest guy in Austin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, you were fresh off that.
Are you saying he was on a bit of an ego trip?
It seemed like he was a little high on his horse. By the way, Karen, I was there two years in a row. I was there right after the person who won Funniest Person in Austin. I was there. They went, well, you know who could follow those guys? Pardo. And why make me work? Why do I have to follow the guy with a
because
trophy?
Because they never, that city has a history of not appreciating their own talent. But I remember you coming to town and you were, I immediately loved you. I thought you were making fun of me and being mean, but you give this wink and you do it on stage and you do it in person where you kind of roast someone and then you immediately balance it out with self-deprecation or some indication that you're kidding.
That's
you
correct.
Might even just say, I'm kidding. And I loved it right away. And you've always done it. Yeah, I loved you right away. Yeah, that was 2003. And I had just won that thing. That was
good for you. You deserved it.
Yeah, well, 20 years ago. Why not?
Yeah. What's
I happened? Just went back there. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did they appreciate you? Was that for that rock and roll show that you wouldn't stop talking about earlier?
that's only because I talked about it on the last episode.
I understand, Chris. Yeah, I get how things work. I know how.
No, it was to ring in the new year, which, as you and I both know, what a great gig, New Year's Eve.
Oh, it's a great gig. Best gig.
Hey. Hopefully someone gets punched and blood shoots out of their head as a Christmas tree falls onto a family that didn't receive their fish. if we could be so lucky. And can it be near the docks?
Sure.
Anyway.
Was that Oxnard, you guys, that you had your fateful New Year's show?
Ventura.
Yeah.
Ventura.
But it definitely was the part that was near Oxnard.
Yeah.
where you get stabbed for surfing the wrong wave.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they'll throw in a plugged-in toaster.
Jimmy,
yes, Karen?
You said that you recently have gone back onto the road.
A little bit, just a tad, just dipping my toe in, yes.
And how can you tell us the difference from pre-COVID, pluses, minuses, the experience, and do you feel you've changed as a comedian and as a person?
Boy, that's a lot of...
it's a six-part.
It's only 17 questions, Jimmy.
I'm going to
just answer them in a row.
Oh, geez. Will you play back the tape so I can remember the order that was asked?
Succession.
I went back on the road back in September of 2022. I did Bloomington, Indiana, the Comedy Attic.
Yeah.
Which is the best club in the country. And I loved every second I was there. And the shows were great. And I was very, very grateful that my fans came out. That said, the people that just go to the Comedy Attic are well-educated, smart comedy people. So that was wonderful. I enjoyed every second of it.
Me.
But then I sadly had to cancel the remainder of my dates in 2022. And then last week I went to Paris, Texas. Chris, you were there a couple of years ago for the Tower Comedy Festival at a club that is a dive.
I know. Yeah. But
Daryl Felsberg, who's a great comedian, a funny guy and a great guy. He curates this festival and he wants Chris and, you know, me and Todd Glass and
Todd
he
Glass
wants good
there.
Comics there.
Yeah.
And the town of Paris, Karen, is Let's Go Brandon flags are on every.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
It's a lot of red hats. And the truth is, though, if you don't talk politics.
Yeah.
They love it. So.
Yeah.
So it being back my first time back after even that Bloomington one. First of all, it felt great to be on stage and do what I do. And to have an audience that was just receptive, and it's got this festival vibe, so it seems like it's more important than just a comedy show in a bar. So it felt good, and you know what? I'll answer your question, Karen. Do I feel different? I'm ending my shows, and this is bizarre. And I admit this because after everything that I do, it's very Ricklesy in a way. After everything I do, which is bombastic and stupid, and I end by saying, just be kind to each other. And then I leave. Uh-huh. And that's kind of how I've changed, because I feel like that we haven't, we have to remind ourselves to be kind to each other after kind of the polarizing and the everything that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that a weird way to end a comedy show? Yes, of course it is. It's very bizarre. But you know what? Who gives you? I'm 50 something years old. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you walk out going, that was weird that he was nice at the end. Well, then scram.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's no John Morgan. He ended his show with singing the national anthem, which actually would have done okay there.
Wait a minute. I'm going to make a note of that. I've got a gig next week in Cincinnati. You're recommending the national anthem. Did he have a backup a cappella, or did he have a musical accompaniment?
On his own. And actually, he did nail it. Yeah.
Really? That's a tough song to sing. They won't stop telling us.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah.
They won't stop telling
us. Everybody that sings, they go, that's a tough song. Yes, right. Of course it is.
Yeah.
It always has been. Hundreds of years.
Hundreds of
literally
years of
hundreds,
it being difficult. It didn't start being difficult when Whitney decided to do it. It's been difficult for years.
This whole time.
Yeah.
But also, Jimmy, don't you think, people are going to comedy clubs to get to laugh and get the dopamine hit and feel good and all that stuff? I think it's a perfect capper, because you're right. It is a little bit of the balance, like Chris was saying earlier, of when you roast someone, but you wink at them, or you include yourself in the roast or whatever you do, where it is that feeling like you are there to try to make people feel better. Yeah. And then as everybody's kind of high on that vibe, then it's like, hey, here's the real message, which is we are human beings.
Right.
Like, you're not on a team and you're not on a side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of how I feel. That said, I feel like I'm on a team and I'm on a side. I'm very one, obviously. If make no mistake, if I wasn't in Paris, Texas, I would have been, running my mouth about, Trump being the biggest dummy in the world.
Yeah.
Who votes for Marjorie Taylor Greene, and how could anybody go into a booth and go, Lauren Boebert's my girl? I would make fun of all of that. But in Paris, Texas, I don't want to be dragged behind a pickup truck back to somebody's, barn. So
no.
Well, they do put you in a wheelbarrow. So you're not actually being dragged. I've been to the festival. I've been to it. And when I went to it years ago, I wasn't even thinking about that. And so I'm not surprised to hear you say it was Let's Go Brandon flags everywhere. And it would be more confronting to do it now.
It's pretty MAGA. It's not just conservative. It's a pretty MAGA city.
Oh, a lot of the comics who I still talk to and I really feel like I became friends with were Christian comics that you understand it's that part of the country.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it's a little bit of, it's, similar to the Larry the Cable Guy, where it's like you start doing your act and then on stage you're having, you're either successful or not successful, and then you're making the adjustments to get, when you're unsuccessful, to get back into the successful area.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that with those kinds of audiences, you are going to start leaning the way that they want you to lean in a way, or you're going to be looking for what's the thing that's actually getting the response and my ego want.
Yeah.
And then there you go. And all of a sudden you're like, hey guys, this CIA has microchipped you.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
I mean, shit, that's just
insane.
Truly beyond.
Yes. You know, to speak about the same thing you just said, Karen, but not politically, is if you make your living doing nothing but one-nighter bars, and you can certainly make your living doing that. I'm not putting it down. But you will also, to your point, you will bend towards making that particular, that style of audience laugh. So you may go a little dirtier or a little easier with the comedy. So because you want to kill, to feed your ego, like you said, nobody wants to bomb at any location. But if that's all you're doing, then that's kind of what you're going to lean towards as far as comedy goes. And then certainly as far as, you know, politically goes, if that's the angle you're going at.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, you're walking around the halls with a white balloon like a moron.
Yeah.
Also, just days late, like so late for that.
She's
to be
wrong.
Effective.
She's very in the zeitgeist. She's smarter than you. And, God.
My mistake.
I accept your apology, Karen. What I do not accept your apology
about apologize.
is that the trailer home thing that you screwed up. It was live.
Oh, God.
I will not accept your apology on that.
You've been stewing on it.
I can't get past it.
Maybe that's why there was the hangar and then the mobile homes was like there was some sort of radio element to it where they had to be in the place to be transmitting.
But wait a minute. But if you think back to your Wolfman Jack years and all stuff like that, weren't those out in trailers out in the middle of a field somewhere? Weren't they little shacks?
Hold on. I'm trying to think of what happened on WKRP in Cincinnati.
No, that was a real radio station.
Yeah. Yeah. They were in a building.
Yeah, they were in a building. Yeah.
Jimmy,
yeah.
Can I they say were... right now, both, I get for my Christmas, I gave my dad a WKRP shirt and a DVD box set of the entire season. Oh. Which has yet to arrive.
Oh, wait, is that true? Oh. It's still, so did you print out the cover of it, like to put in a car to go?
Yeah. Okay. I mailed him a promise of what's to come. But that show is such a realistic, specific commentary on early radio days. And my dad was a radio guy, as you both know.
I do know, and I know your sister very well as well, and she's good people. The whole Fairbanks clan is terrific.
Really good people.
Chris, did the T-shirt arrive or the box set or
the
neither
T-shirt
arrived?
Yes.
T-shirt did arrive.
It's nice. It's like
someone stole that box set. Someone stole
it. Yeah, I think it was stolen. I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, did you see the thing on the LA news where the trains were getting robbed?
Yeah,
and they actually
that.
Showed footage of the train tracks and it's just a bunch of empty Amazon boxes.
Yeah.
There's where my windshield repair kit went.
I saw that and I literally was like, I wonder where that is. I'd like to go down and take a look at what's
something?
Happening.
I remember seeing that footage and the guy just running on the train tracks running, I love Howard Hessman.
And holding Chris's package above his head.
Yep.
Lonnie Anderson, everybody.
He scored. That guy scored.
It.
Yeah, right.
Just running to City of Industry.
Love it.
To look at his stuff.
Love it.
I actually had... not to go political again, but just for one moment, because this was kind of a funny experience, is my dad is in his 80s, but he is a lifelong Democrat, conservative Democrat, but he in the late 90s, when Donald Trump started becoming kind of, you know, like when it was the Apprentice days and he was starting to become like zeitgeisty, I remember saying something to my dad about him and my dad's like, he's no good. He doesn't pay people. He does the, like, right. He had this whole speech about Donald Trump's not a good person. Well, now all of his friends are MAGA Republicans.
Oh.
Like everywhere he turns, he's one of the only people that isn't. And we were at a dinner one night at our family friend's house and they had friends over who I didn't know. And at dinner, the wife of this couple starts yelling at me because, of course, they can tell that I'm not one of them. So I must be on the other side, on the bad. I'm, you know, whatever. She starts yelling at me about the trains being robbed. And what are you going to do? And what are you? And for really one of the first times in my life, I didn't know what to say because what I wanted to say is, I don't know you.
Right.
Like, you shouldn't be screaming in my face over this beautiful roast beef that somebody made for us so that we could all sit down and, like, be together as people. And I don't, whatever you're doing right now, I don't have to do it with you. I'm not your family member. I don't, I don't know you. But instead, I just smiled and kind of laughed like she was telling me
that would have worked
a fun anecdote.
You're good at that. That probably hit her right in the heart.
Well, because it was the weirdest thing where I was like, this isn't the internet. Like, I'm not here to fight with you. Yeah. I just wanted to chit chat and, like, go have dinner with these people that I like. Like, and they were screaming. They were not, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't accusatory or low key. It was like yelling about these trains being robbed and this, and it made me go like, oh man, there's a whole section of people that are having these fears fed and are having these ideas like constantly repeated in their heads of these are the problems and no one will, and that guy and these people and like all that kind of blame fear. And it is bad for human beings' brains.
Oh, 100%. And you know what, Karen, had you said anything back to her, let's say you would have said what you just said you wish you could have said, you would have been the crazy person. Could you believe the way that she reacted? We're just trying to have a conversation, and she went crazy on us. And it's like, so you can't say anything because you can't fight with the weirdo. I mean, there's no winning. That's it.
Well, because it's almost like the point is to be fighting, where it's like, I don't want to fight with you. I'm exhausted. It's like, who has the time for this spending? Like, do you do this all day long? Do you do this with everyone you meet?
Right.
How are you in the world?
You know, I'm going to pull something up here, and that sounds dirtier than I mean it to be. somebody tweeted this out, and it applies to this. And I'm sure you guys all know Quinn Sutherland. You know Quinn?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful woman. And so she retweeted this, which is the only reason I saw it. A guy named Anthony DeVito tweeted this out. You don't rebut psychotic nonsense. It's quicksand. You grab a fucking vine and swing over it to get to where you need to be. And I took a photograph of that, or a screenshot, because I was like, you know what? You nailed it, dude. This is, I don't know this guy, but it was like, thank you for saying it like this, because it made dumb comedian Jimmy Pardo's brain understand, why am I fighting with that? Just, they're not going to listen. Move on.
Yeah.
No. I think Anthony DeVito's a comic.
I don't know him. Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then if he's listening, I hope he gets a nice charge out of Pardo mentioning him. Right, we heard earlier, Karen said it, I'm one of the best, and people are lucky to be listening to anything that I do. So if I say DeVito's name, the guy should probably call his parents to let him know.
It's
a full salute.
Yeah.
It does bum me out ever since you said, oh, these other folks that are doubling down on the 2% are buying houses, and you feel like you're missing out. Because if you look at a map, like one of those maps where they always have the, here's all the blue dots and they're throughout, or all the red dots, they're throughout the country. And then it just seems like the cities are, are the Democratic dots. But then they expand it to actually illustrate how many people there are. And it do, like LA and New York and all the cities grow to be like, they drown out the entire image. But all those tiny dots are where a lot of comedy clubs are, and a lot of people are too. So it's probably not a bad business choice if you're willing to make the moral decision to go that direction. Like, it probably makes sense as a business.
Yeah.
But I do not want to do it.
It's not the business I got into. So,
no.
And by the way, Chris, you said that I said I was missing out. I don't think I'm missing out.
No. Yeah.
I'm very, I've got the greatest wife and son in the world. We got a nice house. I got a nice job. I listen to the Talking Heads. I mean, everything is where it needs to be.
As long as you have David Byrne in your life, you're not missing out on all these gigs.
Can I tell you something? I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2016, or it could have been 15. It was right after David Bowie died, and they opened the show.
Wait a minute, what?
Oh yeah. Oh,
just kidding.
Shit.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The show opened with David Byrne singing Fame, and I never met David Byrne in my life, and the version that he did was phenomenal. It was great, but for some reason he comes off very standoffish and like he's going to be a dick, right? That's how I see David Byrne. So he comes off stage. And I happen to be right in the hallway backstage where he comes off. And I meant this. I literally, like, my body couldn't stop me from saying this. I just went, that was great. Because it was.
Nice.
And yeah. He said, he stopped and took my hand and said, thank you so much. Oh, my God, what a pleasure to see you. And kept moving. And I was like, I would have bet money David Byrne would have just kept walking past me had I said that.
Right,
and
right,
I was
right.
100% wrong. And what I'm saying is don't judge a book by its giant suit.
Yeah.
Don't you think it's like because that character that he has kind of played on stage as the lead singer of that band where it's very like cutting edge and art pop and kind of like the coolest of the cool. And we grew up in like the 90s where everyone was like aggressively rude. And like, if you weren't in, you were out and that kind of like shit where it's like, that is pretty standard. But I don't think, like, I think people who are really as talented as David Byrne is like one of the greatest musicians, right? I think people like that don't need to do that bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Like, and I think he is probably pretty tapped in that way. But it does make me happy to know that that's confirmed.
Yeah. It is confirmed. Now, let me ask you guys a question as two comedians. Is it lame if I write down, don't judge a book by its big suit?
The fact that I know that came from your organic brain corner, very much write it down.
I can write it down. Okay.
Yes,
when you see me do that at the Largo, you're not going to go, oh, look at him. He did something out of his act. No,
there for that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That's where you write jokes when you're riffing with pals.
I think that's been my problem. Really I haven't hung out with anybody since 2019.
Hey, what's up?
What's that character?
I'm not sure.
I'll tell you what, David Byrne.
I'm trying to riff.
Byrne would not have liked that character.
Byrne would have been like, ew, shut up.
I rewatched it, and I know it's older, but it was during COVID times, that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode with Eddie Murphy, and he was like, I used to write all my jokes hanging out with friends. And I don't hang out with friends and say, oh, that made everyone laugh. Let me write it down. So I feel like I can't write material right now. And for that to come from that guy, it's like, oh, okay. That validates how I've been feeling.
Yeah,
that's sure.
So, hey, if Eddie's not doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
But Eddie hasn't been writing jokes for 30 years.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Right?
Although, did you see him on Fallon? He was just on Fallon recently.
I did not.
Either Fallon or Colbert, I can't remember, but he was so funny.
Was he really?
And so, yes. I'll find the clip and send it to you.
Oh, wow.
So funny and so real.
Too.
Yeah. Really good.
Did you see him in Dreamgirls? He was amazing in Dreamgirls.
Yes.
My God.
He was amazing.
Like, I'm not one of these people like, that guy deserved an award. You know, he really did, though, deserve the Academy Award. He was so.
Yeah.
You would never go, you know who that was? Like, it was Eddie Murphy. And he was.
Yes.
As good as Denzel would have ever been or anybody else that would have fit the casting for that role.
He's such a good actor.
Yes, he is.
I mean, Bowfinger. May I just say Bowfinger?
You can say it. I'm not going to listen to it, but you can say it.
Or the fact that, and anyone can rewatch it, and Beverly Hills Cop is a perfect movie. And at the time, I don't think he had any chops as an actor, like as a dramatic actor, but he's so good, subtly good at the actual drama in that movie. Is like, he's one of my heroes, and it's not because of his stand-up.
Right, of course, because it's very problematic.
Because of Raw and Delirious.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But growing up, he was on, when I first started watching SNL, like when I was 10, he was a cast member, and he was so electric. It's like, it's so obvious that he was more than just, you know, gifted in more than just comedy. It's like
Right.
It clearly, he just had it in that way. Like anytime he was on screen, you were just like, I don't, whatever he's doing, I'm on board.
And when
for
he
it.
Was on SNL, he's probably 19 or something, right?
Just a child.
I think he was really young.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I recommend that Seinfeld episode, the Comedians in Cars episode. I loved him in that. Yeah.
Is there a way to get that split screen so I could just see the passenger seat version of that?
Yeah, I know. I know. Why is Seinfeld such a stick in the mud?
Somebody will say something funny and he has a way of either not getting it or B, turning it into, like how they can make that into a 12-minute bit as opposed to just laughing at it. Just enjoy
it. I promise you, specifically on this episode, you won't feel that. He's so excited, obviously, to be in the car with him. And they do have this history from early stand-up. So actually, in that episode, that's why I enjoyed it so much. They were both great in it. Yeah.
It's, I will I will watch that because I have not watched those for that reason. Do they? Kind of drives me nuts. It drove me nuts when he was sitting. He was at, I think he was with Gary Shandling, and he was at that coffee shop and said, it wasn't him. It might have been Larry David. It doesn't matter. He's talking to somebody across the table, and he's like, "Can you believe this? I came up with this idea. It's just comedians talking to each other on camera." It's like, you didn't come up with that, Jerry. You're like the 49,000th person to come up with that idea. You're just the most famous to have come up with that idea.
Also, what is the empty, deep, dark pit inside of you where you are Seinfeld saying out loud to another adult on camera, can you believe I came up with this idea?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, when is it enough? Like, when does it register for you personally that you are... You are already there.
Already there.
And you don't need to do that.
You did it all. And you've done it all. You won. You won.
You got it all. Your name is synonymous with stand-up comedy, with successful comedy, with legendary comedy.
Yes.
And yet still the scraping and the grabbing is like, what? Why?
Yeah. Isn't that curious that you can see that there's still like a low self-esteem in there?
It's weird. It's weird.
That's why
good for him. You know what? He deserves all the success. I wish him luck. He was the first. This is true. My brother, I lived out in California in the mid-80s to go to American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And my brother came out to visit and then drive back to Chicago with me. But while he was here, Seinfeld was taping his first special at the Roxy on Sunset. And my brother and I went. Uh-huh. And I thought he was great then. You know what I mean? Like, my God, I get a chance to sit in that guy. The guy I saw on Johnny Carson. I get to watch his special, and I'm 20 years old.
You weren't doing stand up yet. You had
no. I was just a kid. Right out of high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And it was great. It was I guess I'm saying that like I've been into. I think he's the best of that generation. He's a technician. And he's great. So I don't want people going, Jesus Christ, Pardo's bitter about everything. I'm a comedian trying to find funny. Jerry's great.
But you know what I think what it is too is kind of what I was saying before. Just like to me, the joy of comedy and being with, it's like, you know what's funny and you're spending time with people who also know what's funny. And in this world, there aren't that many people like that, that are attuned, nicely attuned that way, that can hear it and that can appreciate it. So if you have this credit of being the king of all comedy, how come you can't laugh at other people's motherfucking jokes?
Yeah, 100%. But you nailed it. You nailed it. You also made me think, Kurt, of what you just said of, like when we, and again, we're not special people. We've just chosen to do this. And if we walked into a plumber's convention, we wouldn't know what to talk about either. But when we go to a family function or if I go to a school event for Oliver, I don't know how to talk to people because they don't have that rhythm that we have where we kind of know we can say things to each other and you're going to laugh at it or you're going to bust my balls because it wasn't funny. The last thing you're going to do is just stare at me and then walk away, which is what happens most conversations at my son's school events. So I just choose not to say anything because I'm either a bore or I'm sure that people get back in their car and go, that guy was a bore or he was obnoxious. But so I just choose to do nothing.
But these days, well, at least for myself, and Chris and I have talked about this before, where because of quarantine and COVID and all these things and the kind of social, basically the social chalkboard's been erased and we're all back at square one, awkwardly trying to like reestablish any sense of who we are and what we're doing.
Yes.
Like that idea where I feel like now we're all awkward. Now we all don't know what to say. My thing is either I am completely silent watching people or I cannot stop talking.
Okay.
And cannot stop talking and looking at people going, I should be not talking anymore, but I'm still talking, and it's continuing on.
Guilty as charged.
So humiliating.
Yeah, me too.
So embarrassing.
What? Completely off topic. The white doggy there. That's the bee sting.
Yeah,
that's her. Okay. She's a survivor.
Is one eye still kind of lazy because of the
no. She just has a dark skin around one eye and pink skin around the other.
Oh, okay.
Does it look like he just got in a little fight or something?
Yeah, she is kind of. So I found her on a dog rescue website. Brian Cook's girlfriend works for a bunch of different dog rescues. Oh. So she recommended one. And I picked her because I thought she was old. Because my dog Frank is 15. And so I was like, Frank needs a companion. And so I was like, oh, I'll get this old dog. You know, no one's going to pick her. I was like, kind of like, oh, that's sad. I better get that dog. No one's going to pick her. I go to pick her up. She's a year old. So she's a straight up puppy, and Chris knows this, but she's basically kind of brought Frank back to life.
Great.
Because my old dog, George, who they grew up together.
Yeah.
She died not this Christmas, but the one before. And then Frank was kind of depressed for a little while. And I was like, I can't take it. And so I was like, oh, we'll get an old gal for him to hang out with. Well, now he's running around like twice a day, running around. And like, it's very sweet.
Yeah.
He's like, it's all begun again. And we've started over.
That's so cool. You couldn't have even pulled that off on purpose.
So that
I know. Yeah.
So this dog just doesn't photograph well. That's what we learned from that story.
It's Zoom. These are tiny screens.
It's just like me, where you got to get the angle right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or it's like not. Or, it's not going to look.
You heard that story about Barbara Streisand recently, right? Where she refused to go on Jimmy Kimmel because Kimmel wouldn't. She had to be shot from a certain angle.
Yep.
And
she has to sit on the host side, basically.
And Kimmel's like, well, I'll do it, but we got to acknowledge why we're doing it or else it's going to be weird. And she's like, no, you can't acknowledge it. And which is a shame. I love Barbara Streisand. I went and saw her live in concert way too late in my life.
She's amazing.
She is amazing. It was the show was a little sluggish, to be honest with you. It was a little.
Well, she does all those ballads.
It's a lot of ballads. And you know what? It was a lot of. I hope I get the group right. The four dudes, El Devo, is that the four dudes who sing?
Oh, those singers? Yeah.
You know, they were part of it. And it was. They did a lot of it. And I'm not there to see El Devo. Even if you're just going to do 35 minutes, Barbara, just do 35 and let me get in and out. I don't need to see El Devo to pad out the show so I feel like I got a full show. I'm good just seeing a legend. Do a tight set and scram. But
You know what I appreciate about that story, though, is obviously that angle was because of a nose reason, right? Like she's like, oh, I can't be seen from this angle. My mom always used to talk about my mom and Barbara Streisand had a similar nose, or that's my mom's thing. And I bet that's why she was like, no, this is my good side.
Well, I'd
imagine, do the show if I, but she never. She's like, that's how I'll deal with it. I'm not going to get it fixed or whatever. I'm just going to, I'll do your show if I'm on your.
But
right.
At least, to me, at the age that she's at, and again, she's a legend. She's earned everything she's gotten. You could also laugh at yourself and say, and if Jimmy says, well, we have to address it, go, you know what? Yeah, let's have some fun with that. And then go, and then even all you have to say is, I think I look better from this side. And you move on and nobody talks about it ever again.
Right.
Yeah.
But
you're right. I bet that is all it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I look better from this side. That's the joke. So we had to get a desk remade because of you. And she's like, this is my side. And then, we're going to commercial. Yeah. They got a huge laugh.
Yeah, here's my cousin.
Exactly. It's very humanizing. She was on Ellen when I worked on Ellen, and we had to do that thing where we switched sides. She had a very special white microphone that she used. It was an entire lighting thing that took a couple days.
Really?
They had the lighting specialist come in and change. So I think it's that thing too, where I bet you she has tried to be cool a bunch of times in her career and then looked back and gone, it should not have looked like that, which I'm sorry, but the first time I got to be on Conan with Drennan Davis, the very lovely hair and makeup people, the hair lady decided to curl my hair. And I walked out and I was just like, I don't even know what this is. I don't know why I agreed to this. Right. I've never had hair like this. And it was literally like these kind of sausage curls. Like I was a 5-year-old girl.
You know
girl.
What? I remember and it looked cool.
Thank you.
That's just my two cents. Jimmy, you were there during that, right? Like that.
I was there and I said, ladies, let's fire up the curling iron to make her look nice.
Yeah, I remember you announced that at the beginning of the show.
I said, there's nothing wrong with sausage rolls, ladies, huh? Let's make it happen.
Let's pretend we're in Chicago, baby.
Everybody loves a sausage roll.
You know, Karen, you made me think, I always get a kick out of it. Like when you see a bride, somebody on their wedding day, and they choose to wear their hair in curls or something in a way they've never worn their hair like that in their life. Yeah. And then their words, not mine, their biggest day, and they choose to wear their hair in a way that, you know, it's like,
but pulls them out of their comfort zone.
And you don't look like that. And then they go, I don't look good in these pictures because you're not you. You did something different.
Most women never dress like that. Yeah. So when they go to do it for that one big special day and you're making the craziest decisions with the weirdest.
Yeah.
It's so hard, but you are truly putting yourself into the hands of whoever is going to take care of that for you.
Yeah.
Because, and it can go so wrong where you're like, a beautiful loose chignon. That's what classy rich ladies do, right? And then you end up having like Flo from Alice hair.
Yeah,
and
you're, it always looks like so Flo from Alice hair. You nailed it. I get it. I'm not putting it, I'm making a joke because I'm a comedian, but I know that's also, they want to look like a princess that day. I understand all of it. But it's still like that the guy's marrying you, you know,
not a child Shirley Temple.
That's right. Thank you. Right.
Jimmy, really quick. Can you write this down on your list? You should do an album and the title of the album should be I'm Making a Joke Because I'm a Comedian. Yeah. Because you say that a lot and it makes me laugh every time.
And on the cover is you with like a 5-foot wingspan shoulder suit. Just a giant gray.
That gives away the punchline of my one new joke, Chris. I can't do that. I've written one joke in 3 years. I can't put it on the cover.
Well, I've been wanting to ask this, and I need both your opinions. Is it racist if I confuse Peter Gabriel and David Byrne all the time?
They're very similar.
They've always been the same person to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Until I'm listening.
Yeah, I think it's racist. There, I've decided.
Yeah, it is. It is.
All right. I actually wrote that down, Karen. I followed through on writing that down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's good. Great. Good. Wrote it down. I think you should think about it.
I'm going to think about that and a lot of things, yeah.
Okay.
That is your get her done, I think. If you just constantly said, I make jokes because I'm a comedian.
I'm joking because I'm a comedian.
I'm seeing a rotisserie cassette tape thing in a truck stop riddled. With
those cassettes?
Jimmy, when I did your pop culture show recently.
Yes.
And it's so funny to hear you say you haven't been doing stand-up and because you were so funny. Do you remember the episode I was on?
Yeah, of course I do.
Do you remember it being you were really funny at the top of that?
I take your text word for it. Thank you.
You really were firing in a weird way. I think this having our backs against the wall because we feel like we haven't been doing it, so we're not as polished, puts you in the default position of actually defense mechanism being funny the way you learned to be funny in seventh grade. And that's how funny you were that night.
Thank you.
You were doing that thing where you were you kept, without them deserving it, fucking with people in the audience. And it's right when I got mean, this is what I was talking about 40 minutes ago, you would talk shit about yourself. It was like a perfect balance and you kept doing it and the audience at Flappers recognized it. So if they can recognize it there, I'm just saying you're ready to go to some of these tiny red dot states.
Well, you're nice to say that. You know, when we sat around with Jerry and we created comedy. I remember. Yes. Well, thank you for that, Chris. That's very kind of you.
Yeah.
You know, I, Yeah, I guess I try to be funny. I don't know.
Yeah, you no, you weren't even
trying. Good that you do.
I'm a comedian. Guys, I'm a comedian. That's why I make jokes. That's what I do.
Here's the other thing. I would just like to say this, the irony of that Jerry Seinfeld saying that. Me and Chris thought of that, actually.
No, guys.
Comedians in cars getting coffee. That's our
wait
podcast.
Wait a minute. Well, what about, Michelle Balloon did Walking with Michelle, so never mind. I apologize. I thought so.
Different mode of transportation.
Yeah, it's a different thing. Biking with Jimmy is my new show, by the way, coming out the next month, where I interview someone while we both are on Huffies going up hills. How horrible would that be, by the way? Just two guys on bicycles.
In Los Angeles?
Yeah. I do a swimming one.
Oh,
so
great.
Far, it's very hard to listen to.
Is it? Hey, who have you had on, Chris?
Well, one of our best guests.
Very nice.
You get it?
I got it. Yeah.
That's the only direction I could have gone.
Right. It was, you had one option and you executed
Michael
it perfectly.
Michael Phelps. Very nice.
Yeah. Thanks.
Guys, that was 1 hour, 10 minutes. We nailed it.
Yeah,
it was smooth as silk.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you for having me.
Really nice.
But you don't agree, Jimmy?
No, it was great. It was wonderful.
Smooth
I'm saying thank
silk,
you for having
right?
me. Yeah. SNS, baby. Yeah. I'm in. I certainly not mean to give the impression, guys, I'm a comedian. I say things to be fun. You know what I mean? That's what I do. I'm just, now you've got me self-conscious here because there was a comedian that I used to, that he worked with a lot in Chicago who would do a joke and then he would tell the punchline and he would go, I'm just kidding. It's like, no shit, you're a comedian. That's the whole point of you being up there is to just kid. Stop it.
I'm just kidding.
Stop announcing it.
Yeah, it's just that word. There's other ways of saying it, and I think it's okay to let people know, especially these days.
All right. Well, I guess that's what I was doing, Chris, is I was just trying to be safe in these 2023s.
Yeah, yeah.
Safety first, guys. Boost up. Get your vax.
Can't be the way the monsters we used to be, right, Jimmy? Oh, 5 years ago? Oh, you remember me.
I do.
All rowdy, powdered up, doing all the wrong things. Just kidding.
Sure.
I did it.
Good stuff. Look at that. You've come alive, Chris. The day the NyQuil kicked in.
Oh my God. Well, I got it. I've never been sick for 2 weeks before, but I thought I was gonna get away with nobody noticing, and then you noticed it within 2 minutes.
I know we have to go. And by that I mean I gotta get out of here. I can't take any more of this. But
Blossom is insisting that we go. She won't shut up.
I'm gonna just say this, Chris, you brought up a good point. Because of COVID and stuff, we don't know how to just be sick anymore. We assume everything's like we should either be perfectly healthy or we're dying. We don't know how to just go, I think I've got a cold. So
yeah,
I get it.
I think you're the best ever. And I know Karen does too. We
thank you guys.
Talk about you behind your back in a positive way.
Well,
so does her dog.
I thank you. And I love you two both. And let's let Karen walk the dog.
Okay.
Yeah. She's absolutely insisting.
Okay,
yeah.
Terrific.
I love you, Jimmy. Great to see you.
Good to see you. Love you guys.
You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? D-U-I-N.
A-R.
This has been an Exactly Right production.
Produced by Annalise Nelson.
Mixed by Edson Choi.
Our talent booker is Patrick Kottner.
Theme song by Karen Kilgariff.
Artwork by Chris Fairbanks. Follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Dynar Podcast. That's D-Y-N-A-R Podcast.
For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Follow Do You Need a Ride on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen so you never miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, rate and review the show.
And visit the exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Do You Need a Ride merch.